Okay, so first of all, welcome everybody. Thanks everybody for braving the inclement weather. I wanted to dedicate tonight's shiur to, I just checked 5 minutes ago, so her name was not released yet, but there was a 59-year-old woman who was killed today in Yerushalayim in a terrorist attack. It's the first attack in Yerushalayim in many years. 30 people or so were killed. If anybody who's been to Yerushalayim, it's a place you've been many times. It's right at Binyanei Ha'uma, which is right across from the central bus station. So it's, you know, it's sad for the loss of life, and it's sad because it's the first time in a number of years. So our thoughts and prayers are with the family and all the people who are in the hospital tonight. The next few weeks, we're going to be discussing the Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik's thought on Pesach. The Rav encompassed in his erudition and in his thinking the entire corpus of Jewish law. But like everybody else, there were certain areas that he focused on more than others. And say, arguably, the two greatest areas of focus for him were the Yamim Noraim, the high holidays, which his literature is, you know, prolific, and also Pesach. And he would write about the experience, not so much intellectually, but the experiential dimensions of the Pesach holiday were a huge impression on him as a child, and so much of his later creativity, intellectual creativity in life, was a way of formulating and articulating those things that he experienced so profoundly as a young child. What he would talk about, it would be called the exalted evening of Seder night. And so what I really wanted to do, a number of years ago at the shul, we had a series called Elul with the Rav, which was a study of his thought on the Yamim Noraim, is to do like a little bit of a sister series, or brother series, be gender neutral about it, on the Rav's thought on Pesach. There have been many books that have been published, we have a bunch of them on that shelf over there, regarding the Rav's essays on Pesach. The sefer that I'm using is, for anybody who's interested in looking at it at the original, is called Siach HaGrid, The Conversations of the Grid. Grid was not what Rabbi Soloveitchik's mother called him. She called him Beryl. But it's what Jews have taken to calling him, Gimel for Gaon, Reish for Rav, Yod Dalet for Yosef Dov. So Siach HaGrid, that's how they got to that title. And it was compiled by his grandson, Yitzi Lichtenstein, my father used to play football with. True fact. And Rav Chaim Ilson, who is also, both of them are Talmidim of the Rav, and were able to go through his original writings and put this Haggadah together. So I want to give them the credit for compiling this original material. I obviously did not have the opportunity to learn directly from a Rav, but through their writings, it's a really nice experience. So I wanted to begin, what we're going to be doing is going over, through the order of the Haggadah, a lot of the Rav's beautiful Divrei Torah regarding the Haggadah. But I wanted to just start with one introductory Divrei Torah, because I mentioned that for the Rav, what was completely captivating was the uniqueness of Seder night. So it's a night unlike any other night. So I wanted to begin with the kind of introductory Divrei Torah, which relates to the function of Manishtana. So I want to open it up. What is the function, the role of, no, Manishtan is the very beginning of the Magid section of the Haggadah. So what is the, what would you say the point of Manishtana is? How do we think about that?
Get the kids interested.
Okay, so I think that's the, that's a very good answer, and I haven't taken a straw poll, but I think that would also be the most common, conventional answer. At Manishtana, we associate with the children. The children ask. So it's a way of getting the kids involved. Can you need a hand on that?
Yeah.
No,
I think I closed it.
Oh, you closed it. You want it open or closed?
It's noisy.
Oh, okay.
It's cold.
Is anybody hot? I don't know. Okay. So Manishtana is a way of getting the kids involved. Okay, and what's the value of having the kids involved? Can I just push you a little bit on that? This is, everybody realize, this is like a meta event going on here. My father and I are asking questions about children asking parents questions.
Well, we didn't stage this, it just happened this way.
It
says in the Torah that you're supposed to get your kids to ask questions so that they can become part of Jewish history, which is being passed on from father to son.
Okay, good. So that there's this great value, the Torah says, V'hayaki shalcha bincha lemor machar mazos. Right, the Torah already said that there's going to be a conversation between parents and children. And as we know, parents would always love it if children volunteer information or get involved naturally. But some people here who are parents may have heard that children can sometimes not be very cooperative or interested. Anybody who's asked their child how school went today has probably gotten, a few syllables if they're lucky, one syllable on an average day. So it's tough. So it would make sense that there'd be built-in ways of involving the children, like, opening with the children's part. And that is definitely an element. If you just take a look at source 2, source 1 is just that, familiar language of Manishtana, the Rambam writes about the following. So the Rambam says, V'tzarech lasot shinoi balayla hazeh. It's obligatory to make changes on this night relative to other nights. Kidei sheyiru habanim, so that the children see, v'yish alu, and they will ask, v'yomru manishtana halayla hazeh mikol halelos. So you see, the Rambam is writing about stimulating questions on the part of the children, provoking the children to ask the question. Ad sheyashiv lahem v'yomar, until the parents can answer them, saying, Lahem kach v'kach ira v'kach v'kach haya. Such and such happened in Egypt, and such took place. V'ketzav mishana, and how do you stimulate them? How do you get your kids to ask questions? So you effectively throw the kitchen sink at them. You do whatever it takes. Mechalik lahem klayos ve'egozim, you distribute candies. Already in the Gemara, they would distribute candies on Erev Pesach. V'okren hashulchan milifneihem, you grab the table out from in front of them. So like, what are you doing with my table? Kodem sheyochlu, before they have a chance to eat, v'chotz fin matzah zeh miyad zeh, and you steal the matzah. That's where the minhag of the afikomen came from. V'chayotze b'dvarim ha'elu. Okay, so that it's a way of getting the children involved. Another way of looking at the manishtana would be, just continuing forward in this Rambam, ein lo ben ishto sho'alto. If he doesn't have a child, so then his wife should ask him the questions and he should answer. Ein lo isha, if there's no wife, Sholin zedze, right? Whoever is there should ask each other. Manishtana halayla zeh. Ve'afilu hayu kulan chachamim. And even if everybody there is, a wise person, so that the questions aren't informationally oriented, they should still ask the questions. And also hayu levado, even if you're by yourself, shoel le'atzmo manishtana halayla zeh. So here in the last few lines, the Rambam has introduced a different factor. It's not only about getting the children involved, but there seems to be some positive value of using the Socratic method. In other words, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, the mitzvah of discussing, describing, and articulating what happened in Seder night should be done through questions and answers. So we have two possibilities as to what the function of Manishtana is. A way of getting the children involved, which is what my father suggested, and what the Rambam codifies, it seems to be an overriding value of having the discussion of Seder night through dialogue. It can't be monologue, it has to be question and answer, there has to be dialogue involved. Ad kedei kach, to the point that if you're by yourself, you almost have to stage a skit. You ask the questions, you give the answers, and it becomes a dramatic production of sorts. So those would be two satisfactory answers to the role of manishtana. But the thing that bothered the Rav so much about this was he didn't understand the very unwieldy formulation. Manishtana halayla hazeh, mikol halelot, shebechol halelot, dot, 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 dot. If it's just about questions, you could ask very directly. You're not getting paid by the word. So just say, why do we eat matzah? Have the kids say, why do we eat matzah? Have the kids say, why do we dip? Why do we lean? Why do we do this whole, literally, this whole song and dance of manishtana halayla hazeh, mikol halelot? It sounds like a nursery rhyme. So what is this formulation that stresses so much? How is this night different from all other nights, or how different is this night than all other nights? It's such a unique formulation. And the formulation is not explained either by simply involving the children or by stimulating the Socratic method. So anybody want to venture a suggestion as to why we would have this seemingly verbose, unwieldy formulation? Just to ask directly, why do we eat matzah? Why don't we eat chametz? Why do we dip? Why do we lean? What's this emphasis of manishtana halayla hazeh mikol halaylot? Why should this night? Is it just a rhetorical flourish, or is that somehow very much to the point?
Maybe the point is that the night's different, and that's the point, as opposed to that we do different things.
Okay.
It's totally different.
Excellent. So what Ricky is saying, or Dr. Finkel, do you prefer? Okay. So what Ricky's suggesting, Baruch Shekivanta, is exactly what the Rav said, and I just want to try and show how the Rav developed that. You see, what a guy, right? You knew it was the right decision. The Rav developed this idea quite beautifully, channeling his inner Ricky. The Rav pointed to the sources that Ricky undoubtedly would have pointed to in developing this concept. So if you take a look at...
Probably not.
What? Alright. So let's take a look at source 3. The Rav pointed to a very unusual Rambam. When the Rambam is describing the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay, we have a mitzvah of telling the story of the Exodus from Egypt on Pesach night. So the Rambam wrote as follows in source 3. Mitzvahs, every word here, is perfectly calibrated. Mitzvahs aseh shel Torah, it is a positive commandment in the Torah. Lesaper benisim beniflaos, to tell the story of the miracles and the wonders. Shenasu lavoseinu bemitzrayim, bilel chamisha asar benisan, to tell the story of the miracles that happened to our ancestors in Egypt, when? Which story are we telling specifically? The story of the events of the night of the 15th of Nisan, Passover night. So it is a positive commandment in the Torah to discuss the events of Passover night. Shene'emar, as the verse says, Zachor es hayom hazeh asher yitzasa mimitzrayim. Remember this day that you left Egypt. We left Egypt on the 15th. So it is a mitzvah to remember and to discuss, says the Rambam, the events of that night. Now here's the part that's so, shocking. Kimosha ne'emar, just as the Torah says in a different context, Zachor es yom ha-Shabbos. You should remember the Shabbos day. What is the utility of this analogy? Oh, the Rambam is just confusing things. What does the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim have to do with the mitzvah of Zachor es yom ha-Shabbos l'kadsho? What does the Rambam want with this connection? It just makes things very complicated.
Well, first of all, how does he know it's one of the 613 commandments? So he says, here's another example of this same linguistic device. Zachor et means you have to make some kind of a verbal recognition.
Good.
That's a mitzvah to say. Zachor yom ha-Shabbat means you have to make kiddush. Zachor et hayom asher yetzatem mimitzrayim is you have to do the Haggadah.
Okay, very good. So what my father is saying is that in a way he's doing what we would call lav davkaing the Rambam. He's saying it's not so specific that he chose Zachor as Yom HaShabbos. He was just trying to show that when you have a formulation of Zachor as X, that can be a mitzvah. But what I would question then is, why not Zachor es asher asal lecha amalek? After all, that's also a positive mitzvah midoraisa to make a mention of Zachiras Amalek. We read Parsha Zachor. Or, Zachor es asher asal Hashem lekecha leMiriam. According to the Ramban, a mitzvah doraisa of remembering what happened to Miriam. So why Zachor es yom ha-Shabbos?
Because they're both temporally related. This is what happened on Shabbos, and this is what happened on Pesach.
Okay, good. So those are the two that most have to do with Zman, Moadim Uzman. Could be. Yeah. Ma? Hello.
Also, isn't the point of being taken out in time so we could
Ah, okay, very interesting. So what my mom is saying is different. Is different than what my father is saying. She's saying no, it has to be specific to Shabbos, and she's, you know, a good source for my mother in this context would be the Dayenu, right? Ilu, right? Hotzianu me'aretz Mitzrayim velo natsamanu es haShabbos Dayenu, meaning that receiving the Shabbos was part and parcel of the Exodus. We couldn't observe the Shabbos while we were slaves in Egypt. I think this is a hugely important theme. Every Shabbos that we experience, we always say, Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim. So, I happen to think that the Rambam meant the connection differently here, but I think the idea is very worthwhile. We're just in source 3. I think the idea is a very worthwhile one, that Shabbos itself relates to Yitzias Mitzrayim. And that's important. You should just note that one doesn't fulfill their mitzvah of Kiddush on Shabbos, according to many views, if one doesn't mention Yitzias Mitzrayim. That the observance of Shabbos is very much tied into Yitzias Mitzrayim. I would just mention, the Jewish people got the mitzvah of Shabbos before they got almost any of the other mitzvahs in the Torah. They got it before Har Sinai. They got it already at Mara. So there's a lot of evidence to support my mother's idea that Yitzias Mitzrayim in general was to receive the Shabbos. Now, the Rav was very struck by this analogy. And he said, if you really want to understand what the Rambam has in mind when he says, oh, you want to know how to do the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim? You want to know how to do Zachor as Hayom HaShem Asher Yitzasem in Mitzrayim? Look at Zachor as Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. Look at the mitzvah of Kiddush on Shabbos. So what is the mitzvah of Kiddush on Shabbos? You know, this is one of the more familiar practices. So what does it entail? So, Dad, you were saying that it entails...
Well, Zachor means say Kiddush, and Kiddush is over wine, and it's a reference not only to Yitzhak Mitzrayim, but also to the creation of the world. So you have to tell that story.
You have to tell that story. What's really interesting is that the Rambam has a unique shita, which I'm going to try to explain tonight, namely that Kiddush on Shabbos is two parts. We normally think of it as the blessing that you recite over the wine, but anybody familiar with the uniqueness of the Rambam's view? According to the Rambam, Kiddush comes in two stages. That which we call Kiddush, and Havdalah. Normally we think Havdalah and Kiddush as completely separate phenomenon, and never the twain shall meet. Right? They happen at different times, they're different ceremonies, but the Rav said that's all part of the same mitzvah. How do we explain that? I think that it all comes together if we take a look at source 4. And then we'll bring everything back together in this section and show how Ricky was really right when he said the point, when he explained the point of Manishtana. So take a look at source 4. Here the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos explains what the mitzvah of Kiddush is all about. HaMitzvah Kufnen Hei, the 155th mitzvah in the Torah, Shetzivanu Lekadesh Es HaShabbos, we have to sanctify the Shabbos, V'leimor Dvarim B'chnisaso U'v'yitziaso, to say formulations, both when it enters, that's on Friday night, and when it exits, that's on Saturday night. Nizkur bam, that we recall through them, Godel Hayom Hazeh, the exalted nature of the day of Shabbos, Uma'alaso, and how it is elevated, V'hevdelo, and completely distinct, Mishar Hayamim Hakodmim Mimenu, V'habayim Acharav. It is sui generis, it is completely distinct from the 6 days that follow before and after. You want to know what Kiddush means? Kiddush effectively means Havdalah. That's why Havdalah is part and parcel of the mitzvah of Kiddush. It's the same din. It's making Shabbos distinct from all the other days. So both through the Friday night recitation as well as the Saturday night recitation, what we're effectively doing is saying, this day is completely different than all the other days of the week. That's what the mitzvah of Zachor Es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho means. This day is completely different than any other day. V'hu amaro yis'ala, and that's the pasuk, the Rambam says, Zachor es yom ha-Shabbos l'kadsho. That's what it means to remember the Shabbos day, to sanctify it. It means to distinguish it, to remind one that it is completely different and distinct than any other day of the week. Kolomar zachrei v'zecher kedusha v'hagdala, give it grandeur and sanctity, v'zohi mitzvahs kiddush, and that is a mitzvah of Kiddush. By the way, just so you don't think it's only the Rambam who defines Kiddusha this way, anybody remember the Rashi? Pasuk says, Kiddoshim Tihiyu. What does Rashi say on Kiddoshim Tihiyu? How does he define that Pasuk in Vayikra Yotes? Kiddoshim Tihiyu. Ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokeichem. So what is
separate?
Nice. Shetehavi prushim min harayos. You should be distinct there from a certain kind of activity, but kedusha is always defined in terms of hafrasha v'havdala, distinctions.
And atachanam tanu is in the bracha of atachonin because you have to be able to make distinctions.
Correct. Right. I think that's exactly right. And that's an intellectual faculty. Okay. So v'amru gam ken kacheu b'chnisaso v'kacheu b'yitziaso. You have to make it holy both when it enters and when it leaves. Kelomar ha'havdala shihi gam ken chelek mizachira Shabbos mitukenes u'mitzvah. That the havdala that we do at the end of Shabbos is itself a mitzvah. So how have we defined zachor as yom ha'Shabbos l'kacheu? Quite simply, to say things which remind us how different and unique Shabbos is. Now let's work backwards. If that's what Zachor Es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho is, and the Rambam compared Zachor Es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho to what? To... Excellent. To Zachor Es HaYom HaZeh Asher Yitzasim Yimitzrayim. That what are we really doing when we speak about Yitzias Mitzrayim? What is the essence of that activity of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, according to the Rambam's definition? To say what, effectively? That this... Just as Shabbos meant to say how different and unique Shabbos is from the 6 days of the week, what is Leil HaSeder all about? How different and unique is Leil HaSeder from every other night? Now what works out beautifully?
Manishtana.
Manishtana is the kiyum of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's not only to involve the children, it's not only to have the Socratic method, but the unwieldy, or seemingly unwieldy, verbose formulation of manishtana halayla hazeh. You should have just asked, why don't we eat matzah? Or why do we eat matzah? Why don't we eat chametz? Why do we dip? Why do we lean? No, the whole point is to say manishtana halayla hazeh mikol halaylot. That's pointing out how unique and distinct this night truly is. So, the reason I call this the introductory Dvar Torah is because this is the halacha which reflects the Rav's initial idea. He said that the Rav was completely captivated by the notion of Leil HaPesach is a completely different night than every other night of the year. It has its own character, it has its own nature. And what this halacha is really showing is that the essence of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, of telling the story of the Exodus from Egypt, is to say just that. This night is a completely different kind of night for Jews. And why is it different? It's different because on this night God did miracles for us. That's exactly what the Rambam says. L'saper b'nisim b'niflo, shenasu l'avoseinu b'mitzrayim, b'leil chamisha asar b'nisan. To tell the story of a night. And the Rav points out many times that according to the Rambam, if you just told the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim, but you didn't mention that it happened on this night, the night that we're celebrating tonight is the calendar night that this happened, you haven't fulfilled your mitzvah. It's about pointing out that this day on the calendar is unique. Just like on the day of Shabbos, you say, it's not just enough to say, God created the world and then God rested. You have to say, no, no, this is the day that God rested. That's what Shabbos means. So too on Pesach, you have to say, this is the night that God rescued us. So it's about identifying this day on the calendar as unique. Any questions on, therefore, the function of manishtana? Why it works out so precisely according to Shitas HaRambam? Okay, yes.
Do we get to ask a little question for Shabbos?
Do we?
Well, if there's an analogy between the two, you know, the part of the way we ask the question to differentiate and make it really, it's really different.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't Shabbos also
Right. So
then the days that come before or the days after.
So exactly.
There's a question that comes.
So the difference though between Shabbos and Pesach, even though they share the similarity, that the goal that we're looking for is to point out how distinct Shabbos is from the 6 days, how distinct Pesach is from the rest of the year. They share that similarity. But one difference between Shabbos and Pesach is that in Pesach there's a special mitzvah of getting to that point through the Socratic method, of getting to that point through questioning and answering, and that's not a shared theme with Shabbos. Shabbos doesn't have that need for question and answer. Now, why is there a need for question and answer? We'll come back to that at the end, hopefully, or we'll come back to it next week. But Pesach has this unique character of question and answer, which is distinct from Shabbos. Okay. So that is that is, I think, a very enriching perspective that the Rav was able to bring out of the Rambam in terms of Manishtana, that one of the critical aspects of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is to say not only that there was an incredible story of Exodus, but that it happened on this night. And therefore, this night in all of Jewish history is marked. Yes?
Why is the character so different than any other day in the Jewish year?
Yeah, so it's because only on this night do we re-experience the events of the historical 15th of the month of Nisan. What we're really doing is we're re-experiencing our salvation. So it has to have a completely different... That's why we have all these special halachos of the matzah and the dipping and the leaning. All of that is to... It's really, for people who are interested in drama, it's very natural. For the rest of us, you know, this is our one night to be thespians, but that's really what we're doing, is we're recreating the experience of leaving Egypt. We say b'chol dor v'ador chayav adam lirot et atzmo k'ilu hu yatzem mimitzrayim. In every generation, there's an obligation upon each individual to see himself as if he left Egypt. The Rambam has a different girsa. The Rambam's girsa is b'chol dor v'ador chayav adam. Anybody know? Not lirot et atzmo. Laharos es atzmo k'ilu hu bi'atzmo. Yatza atam yishibud mitzrayim. He makes three changes, from liros to laharos, from to see oneself to laharos, which means to show oneself, to literally act it out. He adds in an extra atzmo to emphasize that it has to be a personal experience, and then he adds in the word ata with an ayin, now. It's all about reliving that experience. So according to the Rambam, the real answer to the question is that this night has to be different because it's the one night where we engage in this... dramatic production. It's
what
a... Yeah, so Sukkot is we just commemorate the fact that we were taken out, but we don't commemorate the actual... Exactly. So we're remembering, as Lisa's correctly pointing out, it says, the Pasuk in about Sukkot says, Leman yedu doroseichem, so that your generations will know, Kiva Sukkos, hoshavti es b'nei Yisrael, that I... gave the Jewish people Sukkos to dwell in Behotzi'i Osam Me'aretz Mitzrayim, when I took them out of Egypt. So there we're commemorating the result of having been taken out of Egypt. But Pesach is completely different. It's not just that we're remembering what happened when we were in the desert after we were taken out. We're reliving the experience of being taken out. We're going back to Act 1, Scene 1. I said that right, not Scene 1, Act 1, Act 1, Scene 1. We're actually going to relive the experience through the medium of narrative, through storytelling. So, in that sense, it really is totally unique. And you know, in Galus, unfortunately, we don't feel it as much. The you know, this is a classic situation where more is really less. Pesach night, Seder night, was supposed to be one night a year that we do this. Having to do it twice really detracts from the uniqueness.
So, what are you suggesting?
shouldn't have said that. Well done, touche. Lisa's very quick on her feet. Okay. That is, I think, a very... hopefully that takes Manishtana from the realm of a children's song and really puts it into the squarely halachic framework of what we're trying to accomplish, which is to differentiate this night from every other night. I think it's a beautiful idea that Rav suggested. I want to now go through the order of Magid. There's many divrei Torah that the Rav has about Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz, but we only have a few weeks, so we're going to go straight to the heart of the matter, which is Magid, the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Take a look at source 5. The Rambam has the following. Nusach HaGagada, the formulation of the Haggadah, Shenahagu Ba Yisrael Bizman HaGalus, that the Jewish people were accustomed to saying in their time of exile, Kachu, okay, is as follows. Matchil al kosheni, you pour the second cup. The omer, okay, and now, anybody here get the magazine Highlights as a child or have children who got the magazine Highlights? So Highlights, the last feature in Highlights magazine is what's wrong with this picture. So you have to circle all the things that are like, you know, not normal. So I used to do this as a child. So we're going to play a little Highlights here, which is what's wrong with this picture. Not so much what's wrong, but at least what's different about it. What words here don't seem familiar? So Be'omer, the Haggadah starts with the saying, Bibihilu yatsanu mim Mitzrayim, we went out of Egypt quickly. Halach ma'anya, this is the bread of affliction, the afu abasana ba'ara de Mitzrayim, that our forefathers ate in the land of Egypt. Kol dichfin, anybody who is hungry, yesei v'yechol, should come and eat. Kol ditzrich lepesach, anybody who needs the korban pesach, yesei v'yifsach, should come and have the korban pesach. Shasa hacha, this year we are here, l'shana haba ba'ara de Israel, next year we'll be in Israel. Shasa hacha, this year we are here, Shasa Hacha Abde, this year we are here as slaves. L'shasa da'asya, next year b'nei chori, we will be free people. Any of this sound familiar? All of this sound Chinese? Some of it sound different?
Slightly different than the formulation that we say in my letter.
So it's largely halach ma'anya. It's actually word for word from the halach ma'anya. But what words are added on?
Kol ditzrich lepesach.
Okay, good. So we have one extra word there, kol ditzrich lepesach. We're going to talk about that. That's good. Yeah, so that's largely the same. Instead of hashta, it's shasa, but basically the same.
And then like the last phrase is slightly
different. Yeah. We have l'shana haba b'nei chori, and this is l'shasa da'asya b'nei chori, which is just the Aramaicized version. But what about, does anybody in their Haggadah have b'behilu yatsanu mimitzrayim? Yeah, that's interesting. We start with halach ma'anya. Yeah. An eyebrow raiser. So, any suggestions? I mean, what's it?
Wait, so, what is this version from?
This is the Rambam's version of the Haggadah. This is what the Rambam thought that people were either saying or should be saying.
Is it because of the Sephardic?
Yeah, so one way of explaining this is that, yeah, this is just, it's absolutely correct. The Rambam lived in Spain, in North Africa, so this is Nusach Sfarad, and that in Ashkenaz it just developed slightly differently. Fair enough, but then we would have to explain, you know, why would they have this year? So then, even if we don't practice it, what underlies it? What is the theme that is being touched on? It seems like a completely different theme. I mean, we should start with halach ma'anya. It's a perfect starting. What do we do at halach ma'anya? We take out the matzahs and we say halach ma'anya. This is the poor man's bread. You know, and as my brother would say, my brother Ari, come get some, right? This is the poor man's bread. Come get some. Kol dichvin yese v'yechol. To tell him that, you got to shout up. So, what is bibihilu yatsanu mimitzrayim?
It's the nature of the bread, is that they left quickly, so they couldn't bake real bread, and they just got this flat bread.
Ah, okay. So is it a singular theme, or is it a separate theme? I think that's... So my father is saying, what kind of question is this? Look at the pasuk. So let's take a look at source 6. Lo tochal alav chametz. We're talking about the Korban Pesach. You cannot mix milk and meat. You cannot mix grapes and other crops. You cannot mix the Korban Pesach and chametz. Lo tochal alav chametz. Shivat yamim tochal alav matzot. 7 days you should have matzah with your Korban Pesach. Okay, whatever. That's the way the simple reading of the pasuk is. Lechem oni, which is the poor man's bread. Ki b'chipazon yatzata me'eretz Mitzrayim. You have this poor man's bread because you were rushed out of Egypt. So that you should remember the day you left Egypt all the days of your life. How do you think Unklus translates Ki v'chi pazon yatzasa me'eretz Mitzrayim? Unklus says Bibihilo. This is just Unklus. So it's a reworking of that pasuk, though the order is switched, admittedly, which is a little strange. Meaning, if the Baal HaHaggadah just got it straight out of the Unklus, which, you know, or whatever, or Unklus got it. It just switched around a little bit, but the Rav pointed that out, that it seems to be based on the Pasuk. And what my father is saying is, yeah, if you look at the Pasuk, it says, Halach Ma'anya, Lechem Oni, Ki b'chipazon yatzasa meretz Yisrael, because you were rushed out of Egypt. And as the pasuk says earlier in the Torah, habatzek terem yachmatz, that the bread didn't have the opportunity to rise. Okay, so that's one way of analyzing it, is that all this version is saying is bibihilo yatzanu mimitzrayim. I think this is the pshat, actually. Let me say it that way. It's not just one way of saying it. I think what my father is saying is the pshat. Bibihilo yatzanu mimitzrayim. We were rushed out of Egypt. Therefore, halach ma'anya. Therefore, we have poor man's bread. Just like the pasuk said, lechem oni ki bechipazon yatzasa me'aretz mitzrayim. So I think that's the pshat. The Rav had a beautiful drasha about this, which I just want to expand upon, but I think that again, what my father is saying is really pshat in this version of halach ma'anya. Okay. However, the Rav just pointed to, I think, what's so fascinating, and I just want to build on it a little bit, which is looking at the matzah. If I were to ask you, and I will ask you, is matzah a happy or a sad symbol? Both. Okay, that's very sophisticated. How so?
It symbolizes the suffering of the Jews in Egypt, we were slaves, and it also symbolizes the redemption that we left in such case.
Okay, so very good. So that's exactly right. I don't know what the majority response would have been, but I'm guessing not both. So that's very good. I think if you ask most people, they'll say, yeah, matzah is lechem oni. It's the poor man's bread. And that's certainly what the simple meaning of the pasuk is. It says lechem oni. Take a look at Surah 7. Lechem shemazkir es ha'oni shenis anu b'mitzrayim. Bread which reminds us of the suffering that we underwent in the land of Egypt. However, if you take a look at Source 8, we see the completely opposite theme. This has made it into Haragadah, so we're familiar with it. Rabbi Gamliel Haya Omer, Kol Shelo Amar Shlosh Dvarim Elu LePesach Lo Yatzi Yidei Chovah. So anybody who didn't mention these three things on Pesach has not fulfilled their obligation. Ve'elu Hein, Pesach Matzah Maror. Okay, the Passover lamb, the matzah and the maror. Matzah Al Shum Shenigalu Avosenu Mimitzrayim. Matzah, on account of the fact that our ancestors were redeemed from Egypt. But that's funny, I thought it was lechem oni. How is matzah a symbol of geula if it's exactly the symbol that reminds us of, as Rashi said, mazkir es ha'oni. It reminds us of our suffering. Then how could it be a symbol of geula at the same time?
So Freud says that when you have anxiety dreams,
okay,
the reason for that is because when you wake up, you say, oh boy, that was only a dream.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is that it's over. So the point is that we had that oni, but now we were redeemed.
Okay, so it's the contrast that were very interesting. Speaking of the Rav, Moshe Soloveitchik apparently, one time his son, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, told him an idea from Freud and he liked it. Yeah.
So they never saw matzah before.
Ever.
That's why they were free in Egypt.
No, they this is the bread that they actually ate in Egypt. And then they ate it. This is their poor man's bread, the lechem oni. And then they had it also. Then they were free men, free at last, and they wanted to break real bread, except they got rushed out.
Right, but
so so they had lechem oni in Egypt. This is what they ate.
This is what they ate,
lechem oni. And then they had it also when they were going out.
They didn't have,
this is poor man, this is the bread of affliction. Right. That's what the halach ma'anya says. Halach ma'anya, de'achlu avasana, de'ara de'mitzrayim. This is what they ate in Egypt. This was standard slave fare. So it's really complex. But it's also really great, because here's what happens. And we just don't think about it, but it's really amazing what the Rav is pointing out, this dialectic in matzah, these two dimensions. So matzah is what we ate, that was our standard fare in slavery. And then, the day that we were going to leave Egypt, we would have had real bread. But what happened? We were rushed out, so we had to have one day more, that's my main Miz reference, so we had to have one day more of matzah. Okay. So what was the effect of that? The effect of that was that matzah all of a sudden took on a completely different connotation. Instead of matzah being uniformly associated with suffering, it then took on a second layer of meaning, namely, it reminds us of that great uplifting day when we were rushed out. It would have been bread that day, except we were rushed out. So matzah itself, instead of having just one single layer to it, I mean, it's very thin, so it has one single layer, but it has multiple thematic layers, right? So instead of being a universally sad object, matzah also becomes has a very positive association. And the Dorei Doros, it'll have both. It'll both be the Lechem Oni, as well as the bread of redemption. Ki b'chi pazon yatzasa me'eretz Mitzrayim. So I think this is very sweet, because what ends up happening is that on that day, God in his mercy and in his depth, saying, I'm going, right, the way that I like to think about it is, let's say our bread had risen that day. So matzah would have only been a very sad object. Matzah could have really been maror. Matzah would have been perfect to remind us of the suffering. Matzah wouldn't have had any redemptive elements. But what did Hashem give us? He gave us a gift on that last day of Egypt, our first day of freedom. And he said, I'm not only going to redeem you, but I'm going to take the very symbol of your suffering and redeem it. I'm going to take the thing that you associate only with tears and bitterness and slavery and give it new meaning. The thing that you thought you could only look at and be sad, I'm going to allow you to look at and see redemption. Matzah itself has these two dimensions to it. Now, once matzah has two dimensions to it, it's both tragic and uplifting, then we need maror. And I think because we don't want to sugarcoat, we don't want to be Pollyannish. Matzah now becomes a vehicle which is insufficient to convey all of our suffering, because there's some suffering which is in life which is just unredeemed. There's some blackness and darkness that we just don't correct. And that's why we need maror, because maror is an unredeemed suffering. Matzah is redeemed suffering. So all the Rav did was just to point out that matzah seems to have these two dimensions. I wanted to expand that and then to say how nice it is that Hashem redeemed the symbol of our affliction and that sort of balance between matzah and maror. And just what the Rav wanted to add is, even though I think my father had the pshat in this halach ma'anya, is that that's why the words b'vihilu yatzanu mi'mitzrayim halach ma'anya, that's why we added those words. Because the Baal HaAgadah didn't want to say it was only Lechem Oni, but it's also the bread that conveys Ki b'chi pazon yatzasa me'eretz Mitzrayim. I think that's very nice. And all I just wanted to add to that is just that, you know, matzah, it's very spectacular that what ends up happening with matzah is that, the very symbol of our suffering becomes a symbol of redemption. Which is an amazing thing, because when one is suffering in life, so, you know, whatever objects one has that are associated with suffering, all one can really imagine is that, okay, maybe one day I won't be suffering anymore and I'll have a completely different existence with new symbols and new objects, whatever it is. But one can scarcely imagine in the midst of darkness and suffering that the very objects which have a pure connotation of suffering could themselves take on a whole new layer of meaning. That's a very deep phenomenon, and that was that's what happened with the matzah when we left Egypt. It's an amazing phenomenon. And that's what Geula and Yeshua is really about. It's not just about a change, but it's about taking all the brokenness and redeeming it. Okay, I just wanted to conclude in the 10 minutes that I do have this time. Sometimes you don't even have those 10 minutes. With some of the last lines of Halach Ma'anya. So it's always, well, what is this doing here? Like, this is our introduction to the Haggadah, and we say, so anybody who's hungry, come and eat, and anybody who specifically wants a Korban Pesach, come and have the Korban Pesach. So the Rebbe asked the question, you know, always nice to have guests. Lisa and Ricky host us every year on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. You guys are great. We look forward to that every year.
We're going to eat this year.
What's that?
We're going to eat this year.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh.
We just discussed
it. Is that a threat? So is it just a nice thing to do? What's it doing at the beginning of the Haggadah? I mean, just a nice thing to do is always okay.
Okay, what was the question?
So the Rav wanted to know, why are we inviting everybody over for snacks and Korban Pesach at the beginning of the Haggadah? Is it just a nice thing to do? Is there something deeper going on? Or is it just nice? We're just saying, come over. Yeah.
Our doors are closed.
Fair enough.
Well, the carpet.
I never thought about that.
I mean,
it's a trick question. Yeah. Yeah. So I always assumed that it was a sincere one, but you're saying maybe not.
The Korban Pesach was basically a communal korban. You registered for it with your family.
Nice. Okay. So we'll get to that in a second. I think that's absolutely true. The Rav thought that was pshat also. But what about the first line of Kol Dichven Yesei V'Echal? That would explain Kol Ditzrich LePesach Yesei V'Efsach.
So the Rambam Shitran Simchasim Tov in general is that if you're just eating with your family and the doors are shut and you're not including anyone else in that, then that's not Simchasim Tov. That's just personal satisfaction, satisfying your own needs, and it's only real simcha if you include those who are less fortunate.
Okay, so Sarah's getting a little more specific, and Sarah's saying it's a din in Yom Tov. The Rambam is very much of the view that Simchas Yom Tov itself demands communal activities. And he bases that on the pasuk of, that you will be happy, v'hager, v'halevi, asher b'sharecha, that all the people who don't have their own produce. And Sarah said, the Rambam famously uses the expression in Hilchos Yom Tov, in Perek Vav, right, Halachas Vav, where he says, right, ein zeh simchas Yom Tov, ela simchas kreso. That this is offensive. It's not joy, it's selfishness, it's hedonism, it's outrageous. The Rambam, by the way, the Rambam extended that. The Rambam took the Doraisa din of Simchas Yom Tov and applied it on the rabbinic level to Sudas Purim in two senses. The Rambam, that's how the Rambam got the Chiddush that Sudas Purim has to have what? The Rambam has a unique shita that your Suda and Purim should have meat. Oh, you see, who said it should have meat? It's based on Sudas Yantif. Second din that's based on Sudas Yantif is that the Rambam says that's why you have to be more careful about Matanos Levyonim than any of the other mitzvahs Hayom. That's otherwise it's Simchas Kreso. It's the same halacha, just on the Derabbanan level. I always want to put those two Rambams together. But, so what Sarah is saying, I think it's very true. It could just be a din in Yom Tov. So on the level of Drash, the Rav added a third perspective, which is that this is part of our celebration of Chayrus, of redemption and freedom. Because an Eved does not have guests. The Rav quoted the Gemara in Psachim, which says, Masha kana Eved kana Rabo. An Eved actually in Jewish law does not have assets. An Eved in Jewish law, whatever he acquires, by definition, is then acquired by the master. Masha kana eved, when an eved acquires something, kana rabo. It immediately goes into the financial assets, it gets included in the financial assets of his master. So by definition, an eved cannot host people, he doesn't have his own food to offer. Maybe the adon, the master, can host people. So as an expression of our chayrus, we're inviting people over. We're saying that we now have what to share. That's what the Rav said. I just wanted to add to that that I think it's also a psychological question. Eved lives a precarious existence. The mentality of a slave is trying to survive. He can think of nothing other than to eat and to survive to the next meal. Can an Eved say with a full heart and any level of seriousness, Kol Dichven Yesei V'Echol? Can he really worry about the next person? I don't really think so. At least not usually. So just to expand on what the Rav was saying, that the Rav said just financially, materially, an Eved cannot invite people over. This is in itself an expression of Kairos. I think psychologically it's true as well, that only somebody who is not worried about literally survival, surviving to its next meal, can say, Kol dichvin yeseh v'yechol. As far as the second part of this, of Kol Ditzrich LePesach, Yeseh V'Yifsach, Sarah noted before that in our version of this in the Haggadah, we just have Kol Ditzrich Yeseh V'Yifsach. It sounds like it's the same thing as Kol Dichven Yeseh V'Yechol. But when you add in the extra word of Kol Ditzrich LePesach, Yeseh V'Yifsach, it sounds like it's a special din in Korban Pesach. And that's what my father said, and that's also what the Rav learned. If you take a look at Source 10, the Rav said, what are we doing here? Why are we inviting people over for the Korban Pesach as a Zecher? Korban Pesach was a completely special kind of Korban, which was ideally ate in a group. The Rambam says here, Source 10, Yachid sheshachar es ha-Pesach la'atzmo, if you shechted a Korban Pesach just for yourself, kasher, b'di'evit it's kosher, but if, and only if, v'hu sheyia ro'oi la'achol es kulo, you have to be able to eat the whole thing. You can't plan for leftovers with the Korban Pesach. People here like leftovers or they're against leftovers? It's usually a 50-50 split. Okay, you heard this is against? Do we have anybody pro? Oh. Wow. Not a 50-50 split. Okay, so you couldn't have leftovers with the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach is the anti-leftover food. So the Rambam then says, however, lechatchila u'mishtadlen shelo yishchad lechatchila al yachid. Ideally, the Korban Pesach is a group activity. Shenemar ya'asu oso. The pasuk says about Korban Pesach, right? Ya'asu oso, that it should be done by a group. They should do it. So the Rav thought that okay, it's true we don't have a Korban Pesach anymore, b'dor hazeh, but since this Seder night was, you know, we remember the Korban Pesach. We have a Zeicher of Pesach. It has to be done in a group. And that's why we pay homage to that by saying, Kol Ditzrich LePesach, Yeseh V'Yifsach, is we're reminding ourselves that the Korban Pesach was always consumed in a group setting. What is the meaning of this? So today I just wanted to spend 2 minutes on it because it's a really important theme of Pesach in general and of Seder night. There are only two mitzvot asay, only two positive commandments in the Torah that usually if you don't do a positive commandment in the Torah, so you miss an opportunity. It happens. Okay, sometimes it could be chayav korban ola, but there are only two mitzvot asay in the Torah where there's a chiyav karis, where if you don't do them, you're cut off from the people. What are they? Anybody know? They're both associated with Yetzias Mitzrayim in different ways. One is Mila, and one is Korban Pesach. Both of them involve blood, interestingly. The blood of Mila, the blood of Korban Pesach, which is smeared on the door. And they're very, very parallel in many ways. We don't have the opportunity to develop, but the way that I like to say it is just like this. Going back to the SAT days, not everybody here had the SATs, but going back to the SAT days, Mila is to the Yachid what Korban Pesach is to the Tzibor. That's the analogy. Mila is to the individual what Korban Pesach is to the community. Both of them are referendums on one's identification with the Jewish people. When one gets a Mila, that's an individual's way of Lahachniso Bibriso Shel Avraham Avinu. One is simply joining up with a covenant. That's what it means to get a bris, to join the people as an individual. Therefore, if you don't do it, not just as a punishment, but as a direct result, you're Chayav Kares. You haven't joined up with the people. Korban Pesach is the same theme, except for the nation. The way that you identify, not as an individual, but as a member of the Jewish nation, is through Korban Pesach. Remember that on Seder night, the Jewish people weren't just being taken out of Egypt, but they were actually being molded from a family into a nation. What was the modus through which they underwent that transition between familyhood and nationhood? The Korban Pesach is that mitzvah. That's why it had to be eaten only in group settings. You can't join a group as an individual. That's why it had to be eaten in a chabura. That's why you weren't allowed to leave the house that entire night. It was a way of forcing people into groups. So there's a lot more to say about that, but what I simply wanted to highlight is that the Rav felt that this ethic transcended even the existence of Korban Pesach itself. And even when we don't have Korban Pesach, we at least have to make mention of the idea that there's a collectivizing aspect to Seder night called Ditzrich LePesach Yesei V'Yifsach. We pay homage to the collectivizing nature of Korban Pesach. And as such, we invite people to come and come and join us. And I think that's something that's really important to think about, is coming together either as families or as groups of people on Seder night. And when we talk about our redemption from Egypt, which is where we started on the 15th of the month of Nisan, we talk about, you know, experiencing that as a people. That was a very profound experience for every individual involved, but especially for the Jewish people. That was a real bonding experience. And there's something to be said for collective experiences in life. I mean, how often, you know, how often do we just as a Jewish people have experiences that we undergo together? Not enough. We want to do that. We want to have some shared experiences. I mean, the closest thing that I can think of, it's not Yetzias Mitzrayim by any stretch, but I know that sometimes on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, standing in shul all day with people, right? So by the end, you feel some camaraderie. Ricky was always the row in front of us, right? You'd say you felt some camaraderie with us. Some? A little?
Absolutely.
Thank you. It's okay if you didn't. I felt it. I felt it. Unrequited. There's something to be said for sharing.
Long in the row in front of you.
Oh, wait, where'd you go?
Same row.
Oh, even better.
I'm saying.
Wow. Yeah, as soon as I left, you joined our row. You're keeping my dad company. So there's something to be said for shared experiences. And Yetzias Mitzrayim was a shared experience. And even if we don't have, you know, we don't remember, whatever, we try to recreate that shared experience of what it really meant to be part of the Jewish people, to be part of the Jewish nation. And that's also something that's going on Seder night. And it's a night in that sense to think a little bit about Achdus, and to think about what it means to be a part of the Jewish people, and to experience things together. If we had the Korban Pesach, we would have to eat in a group. We don't, so at least we extend the invitations. So in those two senses, it's not just invitations. When we say, whoever's hungry, come and eat, we're saying we can have people now. Thank God we're free. We have both the materials as well as the psychological peace of mind to have guests. And we want to share our Korban Pesach. We don't have it, but we would like to share the Korban Pesach with you. We'd like to re-experience what it meant to be a nation. So just to review everything we saw today very briefly, we spoke about why this unwieldy formulation of Manishtana Halayla Hazeh. If it's just about questions and answers, have the children ask. Why do we eat matzah? Why do we dip? Why do we lean? It seems that we're trying to stress that this night is different. And in fact, that is the point. According to the Rambam, the nature of Tzipor Yetzias Mitzrayim is just like Shabbos. It's to say Shabbos is different than the 6 days of creation, 6 days of the week. So to Pesach, we're saying this night is completely different than any other night of the year. We must say, Manishtana Halayla Hazeh Mikol Halelos. That itself is the point. And why is this night different? Not Ma, but Lama Halayla Hazeh Shona Mikol Halelot. Because this was the night that God took us out of Egypt and did miracles for us. And we re-experienced that once a year. It was such a profound event. We don't just remember it, but we re-experience it. That is very much the point. Then we asked, you know, what is this extra word, extra few words of Bibihila Yatsanu Mimisrayim Halach Ma'anya? And what we really spoke about is that they correlate to two different dimensions in matzah. The first aspect of matzah is the Lechem Oni, that it is the bread that we ate while we were slaves, and it has that aspect of suffering. As Rashi said, Mazkir Osanu Inoi Mitzrayim, reminds us of the suffering of Egypt. But we also now look at the matzah in retrospect and say, ah, this became symbolic of our redemption as well. Because that day we were going to have bread. But we were chased out before. We got out before, so to speak. And therefore matzah always has, in that one thin little half a millimeter layer, two very different dimensions. Each one a quarter of a millimeter wide. The matzah is the suffering, and the cream cheese is the happiness. And that's the difference between matzah and maror. Matzah has two dimensions. Maror only has a dimension of suffering. And I think it's really important that we have maror, because we don't want to pretend in life that all suffering is always redeemed. There is some things that, you know, are just very sad and are not redeemed. That's also part of the Shibud Mitzrayim. Elements were redeemed, elements were not redeemed. There's both matzah as well as maror. And then finally, what we spoke about is the conclusion to the halach ma'anya of the kol dichven yesei v'yechol. We are no longer avadim, we can have guests, both materially and psychologically. And then kol ditzrich v'pesach yesei v'yisach, as a zecher to the fact that the korban pesach was a communal event. It's something that we did as a community. And we did it as a community because we were becoming a nation on Pesach night. On Pesach night, that's really the night on which we were transported from being a group of slaves or just members of a family to being part of Am Yisrael. That was a profound transition. And we did that through a special kind of korban, which we call Korban Pesach. We don't have the korban anymore, but it is still the night upon which we join together as a nation. We recreate that experience. And so we think a little bit about what it means to be part of that nation. Okay, so we will pick it up there next week. Are there any